Sheriff, it was self-defense.
Don't be lying to me, mister. Buttram was an evil little bastard, I'll grant you that. And more than likely he needed killing. But you just can't go around killing someone in cold blood and saying it was self-defense.
The stranger's telling the truth, Marshal Tipton. Buttram come in here with his gun blazing. You can see right here where his bullet hit the bar. Jensen was doing nothing but standing here real peaceable-like, drinking his beer and then talking to us.
Are you telling me that Buttram already had his gun in his hand blazing away, you said, and this fellow was just standing here, but somehow he drew his gun and killed Buttram?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
And I'm backing him up, Tipton. I seen everything that happened.
Tipton reholstered his pistol.
Mister, you want to tell me how it was that you could do that? Are you that damn good? Or are you just that damn lucky?
I guess it was just luck, Marshal.
Well, I can tell you this for sure. Denby ain't gonna like this. He ain't gonna like it one little bit.
You didn't say Lord Denby.
The Marshal looked at Matt with an expression of confusion and some fear.
Wait a minute. Are you working for Denby?
No, I was just commenting. I never heard of him till today. But from what I've heard, I don't think I'd like working for him very much. And I've heard he insists upon being called Lord Denby.
Yeah, well, some bitch can insist all he wants. I ain't calling him Lord.
Ha! You talk big, Marshal Tipton, but I haven't seen you take down Denby's toll gate.
The toll gate is out on Ellendale Road, at least 2 miles south of town. That means it ain't in my jurisdiction, which means it ain't my job, and you know it. There's no way I can legally go outside the town limits. But if he was to put one up here on Monroe or Southworth or Fullerton, I'd stop him soon enough.
I'm sure you would, Marshal. I'm sure you would.
And I ain't gonna be taking no sass from you, neither.
I didn't mean nothing by it, Marshal. Hell, you ain't the only lawman in the county that gives Denby free rein. None of the other town marshals, nor the sheriff, nor even the U.S. Marshals have done anything to stop him.
This here fella's the only one who's had the gumption to go against him. And he didn't actually go against him. Just Buttram.
Yeah, let's get back to this. What's your name, mister? The reason I ask is when Denby gets through with you, I don't want to have to strap you to a board and stand you up in the middle of town trying to figure out who you are, like we did with those two cowboys.
The name is Jensen. Matt Jensen.
The marshal didn't seem to recognize the name, and for that, Matt was relieved.
Are you just passing through our town?
No, I plan to stay a while.
Are you what they call a shootist? You come here to make money with your gun?
I've come to take a job at the newspaper.
A newspaper? Mister, you just killed one of the deadliest men in all of Dakota, and you tell me you don't do nothing but work for the newspaper?
Nothing but work for the newspaper? Surely, Marshal, you're not unaware of the power and influence a newspaper can and should exercise. The freedom of the press is one of our nation's most powerful freedoms.
Yeah, well, what I mean is, I know Buttram. That is, I knew him. And he was an evil bastard, true enough. But I've never known him to just come into a saloon and start shooting like that. You got any idea what might have got him all riled like that?
I don't know. Could be that he got upset because I took his gun away from him.
You took his gun away from him? You expect me to believe that?
I did take his gun away from him, but it turns out that he had another one I didn't know about.
Why did you take his gun away from him? No, a better question is, how did you take his gun away from him?
I took it away from him because he pointed it at me. I don't like for people to point guns at me. And as to how, when I knocked him down, he dropped the gun, so I picked it up, brought it in here, emptied it, handed it over to the bartender.
That's right, Marshal.
He reached under the bar and picked the pistol up.
This here is Buttram's gun.
I'll be damned. You knocked him down, you say?
Yeah, when he drew on me.
Why did he draw on you? Not that a fellow like Buttram needed much of a reason to draw on anyone.
He was standing out front when I came up and got all upset when I didn't show him the coupon.
Yeah, that'd be the coupon you got when you paid a toll at the road. So, why didn't you show it to him?
Well, that was the problem, Marshal. I didn't pay the toll, so I didn't have a coupon to show him.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that when you came through the toll gate, you refused to pay the toll? Denby has at least 2 men, sometimes more men in that gate. So I'm going to be real interested in hearing how you got by them.
I just convinced the 2 men who were watching the gate that I was not going to pay them, so they let me through.
That would be Blinker and Carver. They're both hard men, Mr. Jensen. But you want me to believe that you were able to talk him into letting you through without paying the toll?
Maybe I should have made myself more clear. As it so happened, I had a gun in my hand, and they didn't have one in theirs. That might have made it a little easier to convince them.
Jensen, if I was you, I wouldn't be taking that newspaper job. I'd be riding on out of here as quick as I can.
Why?
Because you're trouble, mister. You refused to pay the toll, and you just killed one of Denby's men. He ain't gonna like this. No, sir, he ain't gonna like this one bit. If you want to stay alive much longer, you climb up on your horse and ride out. Only, don't leave by the Ellendale Road.
Oh, I can't leave town now. Like I told you, Marshal, I've just taken a job with the publisher of your local newspaper. Plus, I've just paid for a week's lodging at a local boarding house. Leaving now wouldn't be the honorable thing to do.
Well, all I can say is if you really are working at the newspaper, you and John Bryce should get along just fine. Bryce is nothing but a hardhead who seems to enjoy agitating Nigel Denby.
What do you mean by agitating Denby? You think perhaps it's because John Bryce tells the truth?
I don't know about that. All I know is he seems to love to cause trouble. It'd be far better for everyone if the paper wouldn't be quite so hostile towards Denby. And I told him that, too. Maybe Bryce should just publish articles about church socials, ladies' teas, barn dances, and such. I don't know if you've seen it when you come into town. We're having us a fireman's ball coming up soon. What he ought to do is write more about that.
I'm sure that Mr. Bryce covers all the social events and news of local interest. But I know him, and I know that he's the kind of man who feels that a newspaper should stand for things like truth, justice, and the rights of the citizens of this town to make a fair living, without being held up by an outlaw like Nigel Denby.
An outlaw? Look here, that's pretty serious language, isn't it? It's not like he's robbing banks or holding up stagecoaches. He's a rancher, the largest and wealthiest rancher in the county.
He's a rancher who extracts an illegal toll from people who use a public road just because it passes through his land. And since you say that you can't do anything about it because it's out of your jurisdiction, then John Bryce is the only one who's standing up to him.
Yeah, well, that's not very smart of Bryce, if you ask me. But I reckon that being as it is his paper, he can pretty much do whatever he wants.
Marshal, have you seen all you need to see? Can I get that body hauled off my porch?
Yeah, I've seen everything I need to see. Go ahead, get him down to the undertaker's place.
Free drinks for the rest of the night for anyone who'll get this little turd's carcass out of here!
Four men hurried over to pick up the body.
I'll have the magistrate hold an inquest tomorrow. So as not to have to put you in jail tonight, I'll release you on your own recognizance if you promise to show up.
I'll be there, Marshal.
After Buttram's body was dragged out of the saloon and the excitement of the event died down, Matt took his beer over to a table and sat down. A young boy who swept the floor came over to him.
I've read about you.
Have you?
Yes, sir. I've read all about you and your brother, Smoke Jensen.
Matt didn't correct the boy.
I read all about you in a book called Matt Jensen and the Outlaws of Dead End Gulch.
Matt smiled. The boy was talking about the Penny Dreadfuls. And though Matt had not yet been featured in as many of the novels as had Smoke, there were a few about him out now as well.
That is you, ain't it? I knew it was you as soon as I seen the way you handled Buttram. And I know Buttram was fast, because like the marshal said, he killed two cowboys here a couple weeks ago. Took them both on at the same time and shot them both dead.
That's me. But do me a favor, will you? Don't tell anyone else what you know about me.
Oh, no, sir. I won't. I know how sometimes folks like you, when you're fighting for truth and justice, you have to keep quiet about who you really are.
I appreciate that. What's your name?
Jimmy Smith.
Matt dug in his pocket and gave Jimmy a quarter.
What's this for?
I want to hire you to work for me, Jimmy.
Oh, I can't. I work for Mr. Paul Coker. He's the bartender.
You can still work for him. The kind of work you'll be doing for me is secret work. From time to time, you might hear things that I should know. If you do, I want you to come over to the newspaper office and tell me. I'll give you a quarter every day and an additional quarter every time you bring me some information. Are you willing?
Yes, sir!
We'll keep it our secret.
Oh, I will tell no one.
Do you see that man sitting alone at the table over in the corner?
You mean the Hawk?
The Hawk?
Yes, sir. Well, he ain't been in town very long, so I don't know his real name. The Hawk is just what I call him. I call him that because he's got a big nose that looks sort of like a hawk's beak, and he don't never talk to nobody. He just watches.
Matt had noticed him the moment he came into the saloon. This was the same man he had seen walking away from a full glass of whiskey back in Pueblo. He had seen him again on the train going to Sugarloaf. That he was now here in Fullerton was way beyond mere coincidence.
I want you to find out what you can about him, but don't let him know what you're doing.
That's sort of like lawman work, ain't it?
I suppose it is, in a way.
Then I'll do it. I figure that's going to be my job one of these days.
Do you now?
Yes, sir. I don't plan to stay in Fullerton much longer. One of these days soon, I'll leave. And maybe I'll get me a job as a deputy somewhere. What I'd really like to do is become a marshal. Not like Marshal Tipton. I'm talking about a United States marshal.
That's a pretty noble ambition. But your mother and dad may want you to wait until you're a little older.
I ain't got no ma and pa. I never had no pa. Well, I had one, but my ma never knowed who he was. And my ma, she was a... Well, she was what they call a fancy lady, if you know what I mean. But she was a good ma to me, and I ain't none ashamed of her.
Nor should you be.
Truth to tell, mister, my last name ain't really Smith. It's just one my ma took. She died 2 years ago when I was 12.
Where do you live?
Mr. Tobin lets me stay in a nice room over at the stable and charges me nothing because I muck out all the stalls for him. And Mr. Coker, he gives me 3 meals a day because I sweep the floors for him. I have a good life.
Matt thought of his own orphaned boyhood and how he had been little more than a slave to the Soda Springs Home for Wayward Boys and Girls. It would have been much better had he been on his own, like this boy. Others might feel sorry for Jimmy, but Matt knew that the boy was serious when he said he had a good life.
I guess you do with that.
Do you want me to go over there and start spying on him now?
No. He's seen us talking, so if you get too close to him now, he might get suspicious.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. I guess you have to pay attention to things like this when you're first learning.
Uh-huh. And be careful.
Oh, yes, sir. I will be. Uh-oh. Them 3 men that just come in here and are standing there, they ride for Denby. That's the same man Buttram worked for. I don't reckon they're going to be any too happy over Buttram getting himself killed like he done.
Hey, bartender! Where at is Buttram? How come he ain't standing on the front porch like he nearly always is?
Ha! I'll bet he's upstairs with a whore.
Are you kidding? He's so ugly, not even a whore will have anything to do with him.
Well, it'll be, gents.
Whiskey, and you ain't answering my question. Where at is Buttram?
He's down at Lazenby's.
Lazenby's? What's that? Another saloon?
Maybe it's a whorehouse for ugly people.
It's a mortuary.
A what?
It's an undertaker's parlor.
Well, what the hell is he doing down there?
He's dead, cowboy. When someone's dead, they generally wind up in a mortuary.
Dead? What the hell do you mean, dead? Who killed him?
Neither Stan nor Paul answered the question.
You heard me. I'm gonna ask again, who killed him? Whoever it was had to have shot him in the back, because there ain't no man alive faster.
Jimmy, you better move away from the table.
The cowboy pulled his gun and pointed it at the bartender.
I expect you'd better tell me right now who killed him, else I'll put a ball in your brain.
I killed him.
The man turned to Matt.
You killed him?
I did.
What'd you do, mister? Shoot him in the back?
Your name is Logan, ain't it?
Yeah, Logan. What of it?
Logan, he didn't shoot Buttram in the back. He took him on face to face, and not only that, Buttram already had his gun in his hand.
What? You expect me to believe that?
Believe it, Logan, because it's true.
What did you shoot him for?
He was pointing a gun at me. I don't like it when people point their guns at me. I don't even like it when someone is holding a gun in front of me, whether they're pointing it at me or not.
Logan looked down at the gun he was holding.
Like you. I'd feel much better if you'd put that gun away.
Oh, would you now?
Yes, I would.
What if I decide I don't want to put it away?
Then I'll kill you.
Are you simple, mister? I'm holding a gun in my hand.
So was Buttram.
Rogan put the gun away.
I ain't putting my gun away.
What if he starts shooting and winds up shooting all of us?
That's it. Caleb, you and Ben pull your guns too. I don't care how fast he is. He can't kill all three of us.
What if he kills just one of us?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He probably can't get more than one of us before we get him.
Yeah, well, which one? Which one of us is willing to be the one that gets himself killed for the other two?
Put your gun away now.
Although he was standing facing Logan, Matt had not drawn his gun, nor had he made any move toward it. Logan hesitated for another moment, then slipped his gun back into its holster.
Yeah, well, all right. I can't see getting into a fight over Buttram. There didn't none of us like that little son of a bitch anyway. Come on, boys. Let's go over to the mech's place. Hell, I like tequila better anyway.
We just got here.
I'm going with Logan. If you want to stay in here all by yourself, you go ahead.
No, I'm coming too.
Without another word, the three men turned and left the saloon.
Damn. That don't beat all I ever seen. He was standing there without a gun in his hand and bluffed down three armed men.
I don't think it was a bluff. I think he would have killed them if they had tried anything.
What are you talking about? Logan already had his gun in his hand, and maybe Logan ain't as fast as Buttram was, but he's pretty damn fast. I've seen him shoot.
They both turned to look at Matt, but he had already retaken his seat at the table, and he was just sitting there, staring into his beer.
Damnation. He wasn't bluffing, was he?
Matt met the other residents of Ma Perkins' boarding house at breakfast the next morning. Mr. Proffer was the only other male resident. Miss Grimes was a school teacher. Mrs. Mauser and Mrs. Gibson were, like Lucy Perkins, widows, though they were much older. Kenny had already heard the news of Matt shooting Buttram, and he kept looking at Matt across the breakfast table.
Is it true? Did you really do it?
Is what true? Kenny, don't be rude to our guests.
I'm not being rude, Ma. I think it's great if it's true.
If what is true?
When I went down to help Jimmy put out the feed in the livery stable this morning, he said that Mr. Jensen shot Buttram last night.
Kenny, what a thing to say.
It's true, Ma. Jimmy seen it. To hear him tell it, it must have been something to see. According to Jimmy, Buttram came into the saloon with his gun in his hand, blazing away. His first shot missed Mr. Jensen, but Mr. Jensen drew his gun and shot back and didn't miss. Jimmy said he had never seen anyone draw his gun as fast as Mr. Jensen drew his.
Matt picked up his cup of coffee.
Very good coffee, Mr. Perkins.
He's a boy telling the truth. Did you kill Buttram last night?
Yes. Mrs. Perkins, I'm sorry if this distresses you. I'll move out as quickly as I can.
If you make him move out, I'll move out as well.
Nonsense. Neither of you need move out. If Mr. Buttram was shooting at you, of course you had no choice but to defend yourself. And though I never met Mr. Buttram, I did read about him in the newspaper. I know that he has killed at least three men within the last month. I am not normally given to such sentiments, but in his case, I would say good riddance.
Will there be a hearing?
Yeah. I'm to present myself to the marshal's office at 10 this morning.
You may not know this, Mr. Jensen, but I'm a retired lawyer. I'd be glad to accompany you to the hearing, just to make certain that you're treated fairly. And I will do so pro bono.
Pro bono?
It means it would be free. Mr. Proffer, I'd love to have you accompany, but I intend to pay for your services.
There was no courtroom as such, so the hearing was held in the marshal's office, presided over by James Cornett, the city magistrate. Because of the lack of room, the only ones allowed in were those whose testimony would have direct bearing on the outcome of the case. That included those saloon patrons who were eyewitnesses. Matt asked for and received permission for Julius Proffer, duly licensed and a member of the bar, to be present as his counselor. Cornett agreed. The hearing took less than half an hour, and the magistrate ruled that the shooting was justifiable. When the court adjourned, Tipton stopped Matt as he left the building.
I got no reason to hold you, Jensen, so I ain't going to. But I am going to keep an eye on you. You say you're working for the newspaper, but I've got the idea in my mind that you ain't just a handyman. I figure if you're working for John Bryce, he has something else in mind. So I'm telling you right now, don't you be making no trouble for Nigel Denby. I don't need it,
and this town can't afford it.
I'll keep that in mind.
Matt turned his back to the sheriff and walked over to the newspaper office.
Matt, look at this.
John showed him a broadsheet.
I've put out another extra. What do you think?
We've been doing a newspaper in this town for over 2 years, and all that time, not one extra, but this is the second extra this month.
Do you think this story doesn't deserve an extra?
Millie smiled, then walked over to her husband and leaned up to kiss him on the cheek.
Mwah! I think it absolutely deserves an extra. I was just making an observation.
Matt took the broadsheet from John.
Extra. A deadly encounter. Shootout at New York Saloon. Buttram killed. Oliver Buttram, a killer employed by Nigel Denby and, in the opinion of this editor, Satan's surrogate, was himself killed yesterday when he attempted, yet again, to ply his deadly avocation. Witnesses stated that Buttram rushed into the New York Saloon with wild and flashing eyes, his mouth contorted with anger, and with a blazing pistol in his hand. His target was Matt Jensen, a man who was standing at the bar enjoying a beer. What happened next sent Buttram to his maker with what had to be the biggest surprise of his life. Confident in his own ability to dispense death by the adroit use of his pistol, Buttram encountered a man who was more than his equal. Matt Jensen, witnesses report, stood calmly as the bullets flew, drawing his own revolver in the blink of an eye and discharging it with deadly effect. Buttram went down with a .44 caliber ball lodged in his heart. As Nigel Denby's employee, Buttram's only job was to intimidate and, if necessary, kill in the enforcement of Denby's illegal collection of tolls on the Ellendale Road. Buttram was quite good at his job, and within the month instant, sent three innocent men to their graves. Although the death of anyone should not be applauded, there are times when it is difficult not to be grateful for the demise of evil, even if that evil is incarnate in the form of a human being. Ali Buttram was just such an incarnation, and this is such a time.
Matt handed the paper back to John.
Denby's not going to like the story much, which is why I like it.
Jimmy walked in.
Yes, well, it never hurts to tweak the beard of the giant when you can.
Mr. Denby ain't got no beard.
I know he has no beard. It's a metaphor.
I know what a metaphor is. Miss Grimes taught us. It's like calling someone a snake when he ain't really a snake.
Very good, Jimmy, very good. Now, what can I do for you?
I need to talk to Mr. Jensen. Only it has to be a secret.
Does it have to do with the arrangement we have?
Yes, sir.
It's all right. You can talk in front of Mr. Bryce.
Okay. The fella you was asking about? The one sitting at the table last night?
Yeah, what about him?
His name is Lucas Meacham.
So that's Lucas Meacham.
You mean you know him?
I've heard of him. I've heard nothing good about him, but I have heard of him. He's what they call a regulator, someone who hunts wanted men for the reward. Seems to have followed me here, though I have no idea why. There's no paper out on me.
Is this Meacham fella going to be trouble?
Let's just say that he might be the joker in the deck.
Matt pulled a quarter from his pocket and handed it to Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy. That was good work.
Thank you, sir. Oh, I know something else, too.
About Meacham?
No, sir, this ain't got nothing to do with what we was talking about. This is about something else. Something Kenny Perkins told me.
What would that be?
Kenny's ma is hoping you'll go to the fireman's ball come this Saturday. So are you?
We'll just have to see, won't we?
I guess. I'm gonna go see if I can find out any more secrets. Bye.
Are you going?
You're as nosy as Jimmy.
Of course I'm nosy. I'm a newspaper man. It's my profession to be nosy. What do you think of her?
You mean, what do I think of Ma Perkins?
Yeah, Millie and I had a good laugh thinking about that. No doubt when you heard her name was Ma Perkins, you were expecting some old fat lady.
Well, I will admit I was surprised when she answered the door. You're right, she's not someone I would think of as Ma. She's an uncommonly handsome woman.
She's a very good woman, too. A lot of women wouldn't have the gumption to stay if they lost their husband the way she lost Emile.
What happened?
Emile worked with dynamite. Evidently, there was a bad fuse or something, because the instant he held a match to it, the stick blew. That set off all the other sticks, and Emile was killed.
That's a shame.
Yes. But like I said, she's really been strong. Her strength is to be expected, though, since she comes from a good family. Her father owns a plantation in Mississippi and was a brigadier general in the Confederate Army. Her husband, Emil, was a good man who met her when he came down to Mississippi after the war. He was a Yankee civil engineer, so her father didn't approve, but she defied her father, married Emil for love, and came out here with him when he took a job with the Peabody Mining Company.
She doing all right with the boarding house?
It's not just the boarding house, you know. She also owns the Coffee Cup Restaurant and the Fullerton Ladies Emporium. That's how she wound up as president of the Fullerton Business Association. And Kenny, the boy that works for me, he's a regular entrepreneur as well. In addition to delivering papers for me, he mows lawns in the summer, shovels snow in the winter, cuts and delivers firewood, helps Jimmy out at the livery stable. Yes, sir. That boy is going to be a wealthy man someday.
In the New York saloon, Lucas Meacham sat at his usual table in the back of the room, listening to the patrons who had witnessed the shooting yesterday regale those who hadn't seen it with the story, told and retold, until eventually it became so embellished as to bear little resemblance with the facts. Meacham shook his head in disgust as he saw Matt Jensen being promoted to the status of hero right in front of him. At least the story he held in his hands now, as reported in the extra edition the Perkins kid had brought to the saloon earlier, more closely adhered to what actually happened. Looking up from the story, Meacham saw Logan, Caleb, and Ben coming into the saloon. The only reason he knew their names was because he heard them spoken last night. He'd also learned last night that these three men worked for Denby. Seeing them gave him an idea.
Gentlemen, if you would join me at my table, I'll pay for your drinks.
You buy the drinks? Hell yeah, we'll join you. We're drinking whiskey, bartender.
I'll bring him over.
The three men moved to Meacham's table.
I don't like to look a gift horse in the mouth, mister, but where are you buying us drinks?
You three men ride for Denby, don't you?
Yeah, only he don't like to be called that. He likes to be called Lord Denby.
Here you are, gents.
Why do you ask?
Have you been back out to the ranch since last night? What I'm asking is, have you told him about Buttram?
No, we ain't told him yet. It ain't nothing we're looking forward to doing, so we was kind of hoping he'd find out about it on his own.
Well, suppose I tell him for you.
What? Why would you want to do that?
I have my reasons.
Logan smiled broadly and looked at the other two riders. Then he reached his hand across the table to shake with Meacham.
Mister, we'd be pleased to let you tell Lord Denby about Buttram getting himself killed last night.
Meacham had not been specific with the three riders as to why he wanted to be the one to tell about Buttram, but he believed it was possible that Buttram getting killed may have just elevated his own position with Denby. It was time that he rode out to have another visit with the man. As Lucas Meacham approached the toll gate, he thought about telling them that, like them, he was working for Denby. If he didn't tell them, they would charge him a dollar every time he rode through, and that could get expensive. Bleeker came out to meet Meacham as he approached the gate.
Well now, seems to me like you just come through here yesterday. What's the matter? You don't like Fullerton?
Just take my dollar and keep your mouth shut.
Mister, I don't know who you are.
Bleeker stopped in mid-sentence when he saw how quickly Meacham drew his pistol.
You got two choices. You can take my dollar and keep your mouth shut, or you can...
Meacham swung his pistol toward Carver when he saw Carver trying to sneak out his own gun.
I wouldn't.
Carver moved his hand away from his gun.
What do I have to do to make you take my dollar?
Now don't go getting a burr under your saddle, mister. I didn't mean nothing by it. Open the gate, Carver. Let this gentleman through.
Just be glad Buttram ain't here. He ain't as nice as we are.
Buttram is dead.
What? How? When?
Carver's shouted question was ignored.
I need to talk to Denby.
Is Lord Denby expecting you, sir?
No.
Wait here. I will see if he will grant you an audience.
And tell him Buttram is dead.
Oh dear, that is news.
I must say, you don't seem all broke up over it.
I cannot lie, sir. I cannot work up any degree of distress over his demise. Wait here, please.
Within minutes, Meacham was escorted to Lord Denby's study.
How did it happen?
Jensen killed him.
Was the contest fair?
It wasn't fair at all.
I didn't think so. Buttram was exceptionally skilled in the use of his pistol, could withdraw it from its holster quite quickly, and discharge it with extreme accuracy. I can understand how someone would have to take unfair advantage in order to best him.
You got it all wrong. It wasn't fair because Buttram already had his gun out and fired first. He missed, and before he could fire a second time, Jensen drew his gun and killed him.
That is hard to believe.
It's not hard to believe at all. Matt Jensen is known all over the West. Nobody outside Dakota Territory ever heard of that little turd you hired.
It wouldn't have happened if you had done your job. I hired you to kill Jensen, and you haven't done it. Now I am out my best man.
He wasn't your best man.
Oh? And who is?
I am.
But you don't work for me. I have contracted with you to do one thing, and you have not done that.
Oh, I'm gonna do it. But the conditions have changed.
You have already changed the conditions once. I will not raise the agreed-upon amount.
No need to. I'll still kill him for $3,000, just like we agreed. But I also want to work for you full-time. I won't take Buttram's place.
Well, I thought you were quite the paladin, roaming the West in pursuit of desperados for the reward money.
I'm tired of that. Most of the time, you don't get more than a couple $100 for it, and sometimes you don't get nothing at all. I'm looking for a job that can use my particular skills and will let me settle down.
I see. And how good are your particular skills?
They're good enough.
So you say. Suppose we arrange a demonstration.
All right. Want me to shoot a flower the way you did?
Not quite. I will come up with a way for you to display your prowess.
Tell me what you want and I'll do it.
5 minutes later, Denby, Meacham, Tolliver, and several others from the household were out on a well-kept lawn, standing next to the exquisite flower garden of Denby Manor. Tolliver's face was pale with fright. His right arm was extended to his side, and he was holding a whiskey glass.
Now, when I say drop it, Mr. Tolliver, you drop it. And I'll shoot the glass before it hits the ground.
Not good enough.
What do you mean?
You will, no doubt, begin your draw as soon as you tell Mr. Tolliver to drop the glass. That gives you an advantage. I propose that you say nothing. Allow Mr. Tolliver to drop the glass in his own time. Then, once you see the glass leave his hand, you can draw and shoot. If you are successful, then I will believe that your skills are certainly adequate for the task.
Well, I don't know. Something like that might make me hurry the shot. I could wind up hitting your man instead of the glass.
Don't lie.
Denby had brought his own dueling pistol out, loaded and capped. He now raised his pistol and pointed it at Meacham.
Don't worry, Mr. Tolliver. If Mr. Meacham's bullet so much as nicks you, I will kill him.
What? If I hit him, it won't be my fault. You're the one who changed the rules on me.
Oh, it doesn't matter whose fault it will be. My declaration stands. If you so much as nick Mr. Tolliver with your bullet, I will kill you.
What kind of demonstration is that?
Quite a good one, I would imagine. If you think about it, this very effectively duplicates the condition of a real encounter, because now, as in the case of an actual quarrel, your own life is in danger. You do have the choice now of backing out, if you wish. But if you do back out, I must warn you now that any and all business arrangements we may have discussed will be considered null and void.
Null and void? What does that mean?
It means that our heretofore agreed-upon contract pertaining to Matt Jensen is no more. No matter whether you fulfill the contract or not, I will pay you nothing.
And if I do the demonstration?
If you do it successfully, then our agreed-upon contract will still be in force, and you will be the newest and most highly compensated employee of my fiefdom. So, which will it be, Mr. Meacham? Will you make the try or not?
I'll do it.
Good for you.
Denby aimed the pistol at the side of Meacham's head.
Do you have to be pointing that thing right at my head?
Indeed I do.
Meacham pulled his pistol from the holster to loosen it before dropping it back. He held his hand slightly cupped just over the holster. He bent slightly at the knees and just as slightly leaned forward.
I'm ready.
Mr. Tolliver!
Tolliver gritted his teeth and closed his eyes.
You may drop the glass at any time you wish. And don't worry, You will not be struck by an errant shot, for should that occur, I will kill him.
For a long moment, there was an eerie tableau vivant in the garden. Then, with a grimace, Tolliver dropped the glass.
Ah, I'm shot! I'm shot!
At Tolliver's yell, Meacham looked toward Denby and was relieved to see the Englishman smile and lower his pistol.
You aren't shot, Mr. Tolliver. That's merely shattered glass. Mr. Meacham was brilliant. I believe he has adequately proven his expertise to me.
Am I hired?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Meacham. You are hired.
Millie was out front of the office, sweeping the porch.
John? Mr. Jansen? You might want to come see this.
Matt was in the back of the newspaper office with John, trying to learn the workings and mechanisms of the Washington hand press, the machine with which the Fullerton Defender was printed.
What is it?
It's Denby.
At the south end of town, Matt saw five riders coming in. One rider in the lead, then four behind him, riding two abreast. Behind the four riders was as elegant a coach as Matt had ever seen. It was pulled by four white horses, driven by a liveried driver. The coach itself was green, the wheels were yellow, and there was a large crest on the door. The coach was followed by six more riders in three ranks of two. Much of the town was turning out to watch the parade.
John, you asked about Lucas Meacham?
Yes.
There he is. You ever seen him before?
No, I haven't. Not only have I never seen him with Denby, I've never seen him in town before. He must be new.
New to you, but not to me. I've been seeing him for several days now.
As the coach passed the newspaper office, Matt saw its occupant looking toward him with great interest.
That is Nigel Denby.
Does he always make such an arrival?
He always arrives by coach, and he always has a group of men who come with him. I don't know that I've ever seen this many before. I guess he's brought more than usual for the funeral.
The funeral?
Millie ran into Faye Lisenby at the Mercantile. Her husband's the undertaker, and she told Millie that Denby wanted a big funeral for Buttram.
Has anyone else who works for him ever died or been killed? And what I'm asking is this unusual?
I don't know that anyone who worked for him died or was killed before now. That said, this is still a very unusual event. Buttram wasn't that well liked. Well, what am I talking about? Buttram was hated. Nobody ever had one good thing to say about him, not even the others who rode for Denby. You have to wonder why Denby would even bother to have a funeral for him.
To send me a message, I suspect.
You think he knows about you already? Wait, what am I saying? Of course he knows about you. Everybody in town, probably in all of Elm Valley, knows by now that you killed Buttram. And my bet is, they're all cheering the fact.
Maybe I'll just make it easier for him to get to know me.
What do you mean?
I'm going to the funeral.
For the funeral, Denby ordered that no prayers would be said or words spoken. Denby wanted to hold the service, such as it was, in the church, but Millie's father told him that without words being spoken, there would be no service in the church. So Buttram's body laid in state at the Lisenby Undertaker Parlor, displayed in a black lacquer coffin that was extensively decorated with silver trim. The top half of the lid was open so that anyone who wished could view his body. The death grimace on his pasty face made him even uglier in death than it had been in life. Because he was so small, his burial suit had to be cut to fit, and it made him look more like a grotesque gargoyle than a human being. Quite a few citizens of the town came, some because they did business with Denby and thought it would be to their advantage to come, but most out of a sense of morbid curiosity. As they filed by the open coffin to look down at the pale face of the deceased, someone would occasionally, more out of habit than conviction, cross himself, then walk away. The expression on the faces of most, however, showed no sympathy for the man, and a few even showed satisfaction that he was dead. Matt stood in the back of the room and watched as residents of the town filed by, never once venturing up toward the coffin. He recognized Logan, Caleb, and Ben, Denby's men who'd happened into the saloon shortly after he had killed Buttram, as well as Carver and Bleeker, the two men he had encountered at the toll gate on the road into town. He could tell that they recognized him as well, but neither of them approached him, nor did he see either of them say anything to Denby about it. He was sure that they'd never even told Denby about their encounter. He saw Logan point him out to two other men who had ridden into town with Denby's entourage. Bryce recognized them as Slater and Dylan and told Matt so. Although Matt didn't see anyone else point him out specifically, he knew that word had spread because at one time or the other he saw every one of Denby's men take a glance his way. Usually, though, when he looked back, they looked away, unwilling to meet his gaze. Finally, it was time to load the coffin into the hearse and proceed to the cemetery for the interment. Six of the men who had come to town with Denby acted as pallbearers, carrying it out to a glass-sided hearse, its ebony wood glistening in the morning sun. Four white horses stood in harness, each horse draped with a purple pall, their manes adorned by black feather plumes. Matt saw Meacham say something to Denby. Denby nodded, then approached Matt.
Mr. Jensen, I believe.
That's right. I know who you are, Denby.
Denby winced at being addressed in such a way, but he said nothing about it.
I am informed that you are the one who killed Mr. Buttram.
I am.
I am also told that a hearing found that the shooting was justified.
It did.
Nevertheless, whether justified or not, I must say that you certainly have a great deal of cheek. I mean, here you are, present for the funeral services of the very man you killed.
You're calling this a funeral, are you?
Yes, of course. What would you call it?
Seems to me like it's more of a burying than a funeral.
What do you mean? I have bought and paid for the finest coffin one can buy. And as you can see, he is being transported to his final resting place in style.
Excuse me, Lord Denby. Will you be present for the interment?
No, Mr. Lysenby. I shall leave that in your capable hands.
Ah, very good, sir.
You aren't going to the cemetery to see your friend buried?
He was my employee, not my friend.
As I said, it isn't much of a funeral.
So, it is a service you want, is it? And would you have a vested cleric reading words and telling lies about what a noble life Mr. Buttram lived? You met him briefly. Did he seem all that noble to you?
I would say no.
Denby's laugh was totally incongruous in the setting. In fact, some of the attendees who had left the viewing room and were now watching the coffin being loaded onto the hearse looked toward him in shock.
Oh, my. I seem to have upset some of the locals, who no doubt feel that I am not showing the proper respect for the late Mr. Buttram.
I doubt any of them are that concerned about it. In fact, I'd say that most of them are glad to see him gone.
Do you believe you did the town a favor by dispatching Mr. Buttram?
I think that would be the consensus.
Consensus? My, that's quite a word for someone like you to use. Are you an educated man, Mr. Jensen?
It depends on your definition of the term education. I have some formal schooling, though most of my education was outside the classroom. But it was intense, thorough, and has been much more applicable to my life than would be a degree from some university.
What you are saying is you can track a bear, but you know nothing of Chaucer.
When priests fail in their saws, and lords turn God's laws against the right, and lechery is held as privy solace, and robbery as free purchase, beware then of ill. Then shall the land of Albion turn to confusion, as sometime it befell.
Here, here, Mr. Jensen. You do know Chaucer. Is it limited to Chaucer's prophecy?
I've read the Canterbury Tales and a few others of his works.
Oh, I must say, I'm impressed.
Easily so, I would surmise.
Yes. Well, perhaps another day we can discuss English literature. In the meantime, I would be interested in what exactly brought on the confrontation between you and Mr. Buttram.
He wanted to see proof that I had paid the toll.
A simple enough request. Why didn't you show him the coupon?
I had no coupon because I paid no toll.
I see. They tell me that Mr. Buttram came after you with his gun already in his hand. And you, or at least so they say, were standing there holding a beer in your hand. Yet, despite that, you were able to drop the beer, withdraw your pistol from its sheath, and fire, all before he could shoot a second time. Is that true?
It must be true if that's what you heard. You don't strike me as a man who's easily lied to.
Very astute of you, Mr. Jensen. Very astute. I hear that you have taken a position with the newspaper.
I have.
You are a man who is obviously good with a pistol, and despite a lack of formal education, you show surprising acquaintance with Chaucer. But you would take a job with a small town newspaper?
It's honest employment.
Surely, your salary is paltry. How would you like to come work for me? I would put you in charge of all my associates. I think you would be surprised and well satisfied with the compensation I can offer.
From what I noticed when you rode into town, you already have someone in charge.
You must be talking about Mr. Meacham.
I've seen him around. I've never met him.
I'm sure the two of you could work well together, but let's rectify the fact that you have never met, shall we?
Denby held his hand up toward Meacham and motioned him to come over.
This is Lucas Meacham. Mr. Meacham, this is Matt Jensen.
Meacham started to stick out his hand, but when he saw that Matt was not going to reciprocate, he pulled it back.
We've met?
No, we haven't, though you have been following me for the last several days.
I wasn't following you. I was coming here to take a job with Lord Denby.
Would that be the job he just offered me?
Meacham glanced over quickly toward Denby.
Is that true?
Worry not, my dear fellow. It was merely a matter of banter. Your job, as long as you perform it adequately, is secure.
What exactly is that job, Mr. Meacham?
To take care of things.
The way Buttram took care of things?
Turns out he wasn't all that good at it, was he?
Shall we get underway, Mr. Meacham?
Yes, sir. Mr. Jensen, I have a feeling that we're going to meet again.
I have that feeling as well.
Matt watched while Denby climbed into his coach and Meacham mounted and took his position in front of the others. John Bryce had purposely held himself apart from the conversation of Matt and Denby, as well as Matt and Meacham. Now he walked over to join Matt.
You said you've heard of Meacham. Is he going to be trouble for us?
I imagine that is exactly his intention.
To show that he was a magnanimous man, Denby let it be known that on Saturday night he would open the toll gate free of charge to anyone who wanted to come to town to attend the fireman's ball. As a result of his action, small ranchers and farmers and their families doubled the population of Fullerton on the night of the ball. The firemen were using the ball as a means of raising money to buy a new pumper. Monroe Avenue had been thoroughly cleaned of horse droppings and resembled a carnival midway. There were booths where women were displaying their quilting projects, and Kenny Perkins, ever the entrepreneur, had spent the last 2 days prior to the dance making donuts, tarts, cookies, and fudge. He had a booth where he sold the confections, as well as coffee and lemonade. For the occasion, he had hired Jimmy Smith and Becky Carson, one of his classmates, to help him. Green and the other boys were running up and down the street, darting in and out around the booths. One of them suggested that they play the game of shooting Ollie Buttram, and they did so with relish, Green winning the coveted role of portraying Matt Jensen because he'd actually met him. The ball was well underway, and Matt was standing against the back wall enjoying the music and the movement and swirl of the women in their butterfly bright dresses, and of the men, uncomfortable in their unaccustomed suits as they danced. He watched as one of the cowboys walked over to the punch bowl, took a quick look around the room, then, as unobtrusively as possible, poured whiskey into the bowl. That tickled Matt because this was the third cowboy within the last 15 minutes to make such an addition to the fruit punch. He saw Lucy Perkins the moment she came in. She was clearly the most beautiful woman in the room. And though Millie had told Matt that Lucy was 31 years old, which was 3 years younger than Matt, she did not look a day over 21. Lucy was greeted warmly by several of the men and women, and after returning their greetings, she walked over to the punch bowl, where she picked up a stem of crystal. Oh, hell. Matt reached her just as she picked up the ladle.
I wouldn't drink that if I were you.
Oh, Tish, you think I don't know it's been spiked? This isn't the first ball I've ever attended, you know.
Lucy turned to Matt and saluted him with a full glass.
It's so nice to see you here, Mr. Jensen. Cheers.
Putting her glass down on the table, Lucy made a fist, then hit herself in her bare chest just above the cleavage her dress displayed.
Oh my, what's in that kerosene?
Can't say I didn't warn you.
No, I can't say that.
Ladies and gents, choose your partners and form your squares.
Lucy looked at Matt expectantly, and with a smile, Matt held out his hand.
Shall we dance, Mrs. Perkins?
Must you call me Mrs. Perkins?
Do you prefer Ma?
How about Lucy?
Lucy it is.
Thank you, Matt. I would love to dance.
Outside the Morningstar Hotel where the ball was being held, six armed men stepped up to the table to buy their tickets.
Gentlemen, if you're going to come in here, you're going to have to leave your guns outside.
I don't take my gun off for anyone.
Well, that's fine, sir. If you want to keep your gun, you may keep it. You just can't come in here with it.
Seeing that there appeared to be some disturbance at the front door, John Bryce and one of the other firemen grabbed Matt and walked over to see what was going on.
Any trouble, Carl?
Well, these gentlemen don't seem to want to check their guns.
Meacham, isn't it?
That's right.
Mr. Meacham, nobody is armed. That means you're in no danger here. I see no reason for you and your men to be armed.
What about Jensen here? I've never known him to be without his gun.
Without saying a word, Matt opened his jacket to show that he wasn't armed.
Well, all right, boys. Give up your guns.
Meacham unbuckled his gun belt and handed it to the fireman who was sitting at the table.
We do want to be sociable, after all.
Slater, Dillon, Wilson, Bleeker, and Carver gave up their guns. Then the six of them moved on into the ballroom. All knew that these men worked for Denby. Slater, Dillon, and Wilson were frequent troublemakers when they came to town.
Well, come on. It's supposed to be a dance, ain't it? How can you dance without music?
Walter Bowman nodded at the band leader. Within a few minutes, the dancing resumed. Everyone got back into a good mood, and the six interlopers were forgotten. Unable to get any of the ladies of the town to dance with them, Slater, Dillon, and Wilson cavorted around in their own square. While they were disruptive with their loud laughter, and sometimes intrusive with their wide turns, they weren't causing enough trouble to make it uncomfortable for the others at the dance. Meacham made no effort to dance. Instead, he stood to one side, leaning back against the wall, observing. Bleeker and Carver discovered the spiked punch, and they quickly ensconced themselves by the punch bowl, where they did little but drink. That might not have caused any trouble at all had Matt not come to the table to get coffee for himself and Lucy.
They say that Perkins woman runs a boarding house. Ma Perkins, they call it. But look at her. Does she look like someone who runs a boarding house?
Boarding house, is it? It's a whorehouse just as sure as a gun is iron. And she's a chief whore. Look at her. You can tell she's a whore just by looking at her.
What do you say that after this dance is over, we drop by her whorehouse and do some business with her?
Matt put both cups down and stepped up to the two men.
Excuse me. I wonder if I could ask you two men to step outside.
Matt's sudden appearance surprised the two men, neither of whom had noticed him approach the coffee table.
What do you want us to go outside for?
Because I heard what you two said about Mrs. Perkins, and I don't like it.
Oh, calling her a whore, you mean? Seeing as you're probably sampling some of her services, I don't know why you'd get all upset over it.
Step outside.
Why should we?
Because I'm going to whip your ass, and I don't want to create a disturbance in here.
Now, which ass are you going to whoop? Because maybe you didn't notice, but there's two of us and only one of you. And you ain't wearing no gun this time.
I know that isn't fair, being that there are only two of you. But life isn't fair. Sometimes, that's just the way it is.
A big grin spread across Bleeker's face, and he turned to Carver.
Well, now, what do you think, Carver? Looks to me like he's challenging both of us at the same time. Christmas is coming early this year. What do you say we go outside with this fella and teach him a lesson or two?
But quietly. I see no need for disturbing the others at their fun.
You mean you don't want your whore to see you get beat, don't you?
Come on, let's go. This is gonna be fun.
Matt followed the two men outside into the street. Suddenly, both men spun around, knives in their hands. Bleeker took a swipe first, then Carver.
I thought this was gonna be a fist fight.
Yeah, well, life is just full of surprises, ain't it?
Bleeker made another swipe toward Matt, but again, Matt managed to skillfully avoid the blades.
You took away our guns, but you didn't say nothing about knives, did you?
Bleeker swung his knife in a low, vicious arc, the flashing blade opening a wound in Matt's side. Matt staggered back. Bleeker moved in again, trying to take advantage of Matt's wound, but to his surprise, Matt sent a booted foot at the Y of Bleeker's legs. When Bleeker dropped his knife and grabbed his groin, Matt slammed his fist into Bleeker's neck, crushing his larynx. Bleeker fell to the ground, even as Matt picked up the knife and turned to face Carver. Carver saw what had happened to Bleeker and realized that he was now alone. Carver turned and ran, leaving his partner on the ground behind him. Matt was in no condition to give chase. In fact, he was in no condition to continue the fight, and he was glad Carver had run. He felt the nausea rising up in him. Dizzy and weak, Matt staggered back to the hotel.
Mr. Jensen!
Matt didn't stop. He stumbled into the hotel, Carl right behind him.
Mr. Jensen, what happened?
Everyone stared at Matt. Then they saw the blood spilling through the fingers of the hand he held clasped over his wound.
Matt!
Matt felt the room spinning, then a weakness, then nothing.